is recently seen on film with Sinatra in First Deadly Sin. He's currently starring in Without a Trace. He stars on Broadway in Amadeus and recently in Winds of War on television. You grew up in San Francisco?
Yeah, I was raised there.
You actually grew up there?
Yeah, I was born there, and then we went back to Alabama. And then from age 7, I was raised in San Francisco. And then at 13, we moved to Marin County, which is just over the Golden Gate from San Francisco.
Always want to act? I mean, by always, from high school on?
No, I wanted to be an astronaut. I wanted to be, you know, a fireman. I wanted to be everything. But I remember I wanted to be a mathematics teacher. I'd hoped to be an astronaut, but I didn't know whether I really had it. And then my senior year of high school, I also wanted to be a great jock. And that's I tried it, but I was always second, third string. And the coaches loved me because I tried so hard.
What sport? Baseball?
Football. And I was too light. I should have played basketball. But football was always the game. Because when I went to school, that was, you know, that's how the girls...
Macho.
Yeah, that was the macho stuff. And you wanted to get girls. That's what you did. You played football. So I did all that stuff. And then my senior year, I didn't make the baseball team. And so I did the school play because there was this wonderful guy who ran the department. He was great fun. We had one. I did a play called Out of the Frying Pan by Francis Swan, an old 1940s comedy about actors in New York struggling to get a job. And just had a wonderful time. Fell in love with my leading lady. And, you know, it was so exciting. It was also comedy. If I really look back, I've been a ham, you know, since I was, my father's a ham. And, you know, we'd always sort of clowned. But then suddenly standing in front of an audience and making them laugh. And then making them laugh more before you even got the next line, just by pulling faces and stuff. It was so exciting. You know, it just, you know, this is where I keep wondering. I mean, I have all my sort of artistic, maybe pretensions, but certain goals anyway about what I want to achieve with it all. But every now and again, I have to understand, I'm really a ham, and I love it. And I love making them laugh. And I love making them gasp and go quiet and, you know, and go, oh, my God.
It's kind of power, isn't it?
Well, it's a kind of power, and it's just fun. It's just fun. But I mean, anybody who tells a story, and when you really get a good laugh at the party or the dinner table, it's wonderful.
You were seriously trained, weren't you? I mean, you did Shakespeare and all that.
Oh, yeah. After I got out of high school, I suddenly started doing community theater and whatnot. When I went to college, a guy took over the department. I started doing, you know, a lot of classical theater in college. And then every summer I would do Shakespeare festivals, either in Santa Clara, which is south of San Francisco, or Marin. And I did a lot of Shakespeare and all this. I never went to a drama school, per se.
Shakespeare, the great, as Charlton Heston said, he's the great equalizer for all actors, because no one gets it down.
Exactly. You never get it right. It's like... You never can get the best time. You can never break the record. Because it's... But, you know, and I'm finding it with Amadeus now, that Salieri is one of those kind of parts. I mean, you can get a standing ovation, and you can make them gasp, and you can laugh and make them laugh more and make them laugh more on the one line. But it's like... You can make them laugh, but you know you missed the heart-wrenching side, or you heart-wrenched it, but you didn't get the laugh. But there's something you never get right. And Shakespeare's like that. Because if you get the human tragedy or the human story of Othello, whatever this thing is, you'll miss the glory of the verse somehow, you know, because it's the most glorious poetry ever written, and you'll miss that somehow, or you there's something, it's just too big. It's too big a canvas.
Have you done Arthur Miller?
I've never done Miller.
Tennessee Williams.
I done trying to think of the play, Rose Tattoo.
When you do a great contemporary playwright, Is the magic of it that the words fit so well?
Yeah, and suddenly you find whatever the scene is. Yeah, it's whatever the scene is. First off, you learn the words like that. You don't have to worry about the words. They just come because they're natural, because they're right. They're right. And suddenly the scene just goes click. It's also, I mean, you have to be right, you know, properly cast. And so suddenly you're playing with the right attitude from the other actors as well. And you're in the right attitude. I mean, you can also get miscast yourself. But suddenly, it all clicks. I remember the first time I did Long Day's Journey Into Night, Eugene O'Neill. And we had a wonderful, spectacular group of actors. And we were the touring production for this rep company. I mean, they had the first stringers playing, you know, the main house. But we were doing the touring production. But this group of people were just wonderful. It was the first experience I had to where it all went. And it was spectacular. We had about four performances that went, and then suddenly... The play is like 3 hours, 10 minutes long. I mean, we'd cut a lot of it out. It was still 3 hours, 10 minutes. But I remember playing a gymnasium in San Jose, and these people were on bleachers and on, you know, folding metal chairs, and they were dead quiet, and it was standing ovation. It was 8 extra curtain calls. They went wild over, you know, this play. And we managed to strike an attitude because it was a family. We had this wonderful family at the beginning, and you watched it disintegrate. And when you strike that... I mean, and unfortunately, when you get a group of people to do it, I mean, it's 1 in 15, it's 1 in 25 that it happens. I mean, for me, it's like 1 in 5 or 10 that it really goes click, just personally. I mean, it gets better. You always sort of, you've got it down, you know. But when it really goes, that added thing gets at it. This.
What do you do the nights when it's not going right?
Well, that's where every piece of technique and experience you've got. When I was talking before about how to put a scene together, that you put the thoughts together. And if you do that right, I mean, Bent was this horrible story, and sometimes you come in, and it's a Sunday matinee, and it's beautiful out. You should be playing softball. You shouldn't be burying yourself in Dachau for 2 hours. But you come in, and if you can just go through, I do a series of physical exercises, and then, like in Amadeus, I'm preset on the stage before the show starts. So I have a series of thoughts. I just go through it. I just go through these series of lines and whatnot to try and get that start into it.
And now, then, when the nights when it doesn't click right away, I know in Mel Torme told me as a singer, sometimes he'd like that because then it's a challenge to get them.
Yeah. Well, now, I don't know, what is he talking about the audience?
To change? He's talking about getting the audience.
Getting the audience, that's a real thing. Because, I mean, playing, getting the reality of the scene and all that, that's an acting thing. But performance, acting and performance are two separate categories in my mind. Getting the audience swept up, and then in Amadeus, because I address them, and it really is, I'm telling them the story, I feel it all the time, and you lose them, you get them, and you just can silence them, and you'll suddenly, they'll go, I mean, it's pin drop time, and then suddenly you'll go, I got me a cloak of gray, and they'll go, oh, no, and you go, yes, and you just play with them. It's so spectacular to have them so involved in the story, and then the nights when you don't have that, when something goes wrong, I mean, it's always curious to me when another actor's down or an understudy's on or, you know, a glass falls and breaks when it shouldn't fall and break. And then suddenly the audience is like, uh-oh. And then you've got to try and get them back. There's an adrenaline pump there. And it's just suddenly, then that's those moments to where nothing else exists. You are there. Nothing else exists. I mean, because you're there on stage. The wonderful thing about stage is that for the 2 hours, 2.5 hours, nothing can get at you. You know approximately what's going to happen for the next 2.5 hours. Not many people face that. You know, know approximately what's going to happen for the next 2.5 hours. It's a wonderful, safe. Barrymore used to talk about it all the time. It's just the world doesn't exist for a while. And when those things happen, and suddenly that adrenaline pumps, there's nothing that equals it.
Our special guest, David Dukes, one of America's brilliant actors. He stars on Broadway in he's embarrassed every time I say it. He's asked, he would rather have me saying the shortstop of the Detroit Tigers.
Yes, I would.
David Dukes, because when you get down to it, that's what it really is. He would really rather be Herschel Walker, for reasons more than just that. He stars in Amadeus on Broadway, recently in Winds of War, currently in Without a Trace. We start the phone calls with Bethesda, Maryland. Hello.
Hello, David.
Hello there.
Good morning, Larry.
Morning.
Listen, I saw you in Bent, and Richard Gere left the show after the first act.
Oh, that one of those, yeah.
And I know that what that did to me, you know, as a member of the audience.
You mean a different actor took over?
Yes, just in the second. He lost his voice between the first and second act, so I understood he had to go on just for the second act.
What was that like?
Yeah, what does that do to you?
Well, it blows a lot of reality, you know, to go through. But I don't know which performance you saw, because that happened more than once in the course of the 6 months. But the first time it went on, the first time it happened, the understudy had only been hired for about 6 months, for about 2 weeks, and he didn't know the words yet. So I was suddenly on stage, just the two of us and two piles of rocks going back and forth. And this actor who didn't know the words yet, and he'd just never been rehearsed. So I remember coming out, and I remember delivering my first line, I realized, well, he's out of position. He doesn't, maybe he's a little rocky on the moves. And then, of course, I realized he didn't know the words. And then I went through, and I remember in the first scene, he had to say something about he had got me there to this assignment of moving the rocks. And he didn't come out with that line. He just forgot that line. Well, my character's reaction for the rest of the scene is off that line. And he didn't say it, and he didn't say it. So I finally said, you wouldn't happen to know how I got here, would you? Or I said, I wonder how I got here. And he'd say, these rocks are heavy, but you'll get used to it. And then I finally said, right up to him, right into his face, and said, you wouldn't happen to know how I got here, would you? And he said, oh, yeah, oh, no, I got you. And I said, fine, that's what I thought. And then, but the whole second act had to be improvised.
Wow.
But you, listen, I just want to tell you that I thought that was like one of the coolest plays I've ever seen, and you were really, really great.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Thank you,
I agree. It was an amazing adventure going through. But improvising with an understudy like that, when all your basic realities change, is very interesting, because you have to find out what the play is basically about all over again.
Thank you very much. Our guest is David Dukes, and we go to the Bronx, New York. Hello.
Hi, Larry. I just want to wish you the very best on your TV show.
Thank you.
And now I have a question for Dave.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Which speech is that?
Now that's inventive. Right out of Windsor War.
Is that the invasion of Poland we're talking about?
Thank you very much. It takes a large compendium to make America. We'll go to Scottsdale, Arizona. Hello.
Morning. How are you, David?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
Fine. I had a question lined up for Winds of War, but listening to your interview, you made a statement. I'd like to have you expand on it, please, before I get to Winds of War. You said something to the effect that when method acting goes wrong, it's a bit like masturbation.
Yes.
Could you expand on that?
Yeah, it seems to me that acting is storytelling. I mean, it's all of us gathering around. I mean, a group of people are telling a story together, and I have my part of the story to tell, and my part of this, and the way I tell my story causes the other people to tell their part of the story. And when method acting goes wrong, it seems to me it only happens in America as opposed to Russia, where this technique was invented by Stanislavski. What happens is they get so involved in their own feelings, the actor gets so involved in his or her own feelings, that they forget the character and the story and what they must do to cause the story to go forward. And so let's say they're playing a villain, and you start understanding the villain's side, and so suddenly you get very sympathetic or soft, where you really are required to be unsympathetic and hateful. And I see this happen on again and again and again, to where they just don't do the play so that anyone else could work with
them. So you're literally doing it by yourself.
Yeah, and their emotions get more important than the play and the playwright.
What's the question on Winds of War, sir?
Winds of War. I'm blind, and I read the book on talking books from the Library of Congress.
Uh-huh.
And I really enjoyed it. And the book was, of course, built around the characters of mother and father and their family.
Right.
And it started out...
Well, what's the question, sir? What's the question? We know that.
Which part did you play?
Oh. I was Leslie Sloat, who... he's the guy what loses the girl. Natalie Jastrow, who's Allie McGraw in the thing, is in love with Leslie Sloat to begin with, and then through the course of it, slowly falls in love with Byron Henry, Jan Michael Vincent, and slowly leaves him and goes off for the younger man.
And he accepts it.
And he, yes. And Leslie has to sort of... But what was fascinating about the character for me is that he goes from being a supremely self-confident prig, I guess, and then through the course of it just gets humbled and humbled until by the end he's just an absolute doubt about himself in human relations and his foreign service that he works for.
Did you shoot in sequence?
No, entirely out of sequence. My first day was my last scene.
That's one of the hard things about filming.
Oh, yeah. Also, with that one, the schedule was so crazy. My first day in January was my last scene, and I finished in September. You know, it's crazy, that film thing.
With David Dukes, we go to New York City. Hello.
Hello, Larry.
Hi.
I had a couple of questions for David, actually. My first question is, about 2 years ago, I saw the production of Philadelphia Story at Lincoln Center, and so I remember you were originally scheduled to be in it, and then ended up not being in it. I was wondering what happened.
You're absolutely right. I was scheduled, and I'm trying to remember myself exactly why, and I don't really remember exactly why. I think... another job came up. I'd never actually signed for it, because what it was, we talked about it, and I thought that would be very interesting, and then they advertised it before I ever said yes.
Yeah, I remember seeing an ad with your picture in it, actually.
Right, and so suddenly there was all this advertisement before I ever said yes, and then I don't remember now what happened and why I didn't do it, but there was another job. It may have been only when I laugh, but I don't exactly remember what it was. But something else came up, and I decided not to do it, and they'd done all this advertising, so it got very funny. So I was sorry. I hope you didn't come to see me, but it's a wonderful play. I hope you enjoyed.
It would have been better with you.
What's the second question?
The second question is, what I would suspect, I haven't seen you in Bent on Broadway, that was one of the most demanding roles. Do you think that emotionally that was one of the most draining and demanding? Or
can't be more than you're doing now.
Well, Amadeus, Salieri in Amadeus is the hardest part I think I've ever done, bar none. Physically, it's like running a marathon every night. Bent was very difficult because of the emotional thing, and because it's a very serious drama, and because of what we had to go through and do in that play, and maintaining an audience. I mean, the concentration and intensity, with just the two of us trying to sustain the last hour of the show alone, that was very demanding. But this one, Salieri and Amadeus, I've just never done a part like this, with the comedy, the serious, you know, the highs, the lows, the quiets, the louds.
Old man, young man.
It just, I've never done a part like it.
With David Duke, St. Albans, West Virginia. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Larry, I liked the Life article. That was really good.
Thank you.
David?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry I missed you in First Deadly Sin, because I've read that book about four times.
Ah, well, it was a very different film from the book.
Unfortunately.
Well, yeah. That's what I've heard. On Winds of War, of course, mm-hmm. I read that and only missed one of the segments. Are we going to get War and Remember?
By the way, I was going to ask, you asked about that. He is wearing a button. It says, War and Remembrance, and in the middle, Where's Natalie? With a question mark, and it's put out by Pocketbooks.
Yes. I just got this tonight, as a matter of fact. Pocketbooks has got the paperback out of War and Remembrance, and so they're pushing it like crazy. So I'm wearing it. It's actually number 10 on the bestseller list at the moment, War and Remembrance.
I had finished the book about a month before the program came on the air, and I didn't know what the name of the sequel was. I just knew that something was missing.
Are they going to do a sequel?
Well, there was no plans to do it when we were talking about it. Now, I assume because of the success that there's certainly feasibility studies, but Winds of War was 2 years, I mean, a year of preparation, a year of putting the script together, a real year of groups of people prepping it, a year and 3 weeks to shoot, and then almost a year to edit. So, I mean, it will be many years before you see it, because as far as I know, there's no script.
Why do you think so many people were so angry about it? Critics went beyond the realms of criticism, some of them.
I don't know.
I mean, you got very good reviews, and there were some slash reviews
that signaled you out
for praise. I mean, why do you think the reaction was so harsh to it?
I don't know. There's a certain amount of thing. It happened on Beacon Hill, the series I did on television, which was the American version of Upstairs, Downstairs. And there's a certain thing when you publicize something big. And on Beacon Hill, I remember CBS said, we're going to change the face of American television. Well, once you make that statement, you better be there. And I think with all the hoopla we had over ABC, it's like, okay, show us. And there's a certain sort of attitude of that. It's also, you build it up and you build it up and you build it up, and ultimately it's television. I mean, you're shooting 12 pages a day, and, you know, 9 to 12 pages a day, you're shooting spectacle, 9 to 12 pages, and it's ultimately it's television. And, you know, I think it's very good for television. If you balance it off against any of the other miniseries, I think it comes off very well. But it's not feature film because you don't have the time or the budget for that. I mean, if we did a feature film kind of production, I mean, we'd be talking hundreds of millions of dollars for what we did. But we did 9 feature films on a $38 million budget. And that's very cheap in terms of today's market.
Thank you very much. Did you take any of the criticism personally? Do you get involved in it enough to say?
I always read all the critics, and if they say something that strikes a note, of course I pay attention. But if 3 of them say the same thing, you have to pay attention.
Yeah. Chevy Chase, Maryland, for David Dukes. Hello.
Yes, good evening, Larry.
Hi.
I'm wondering, Mr. Dukes,
mm-hmm.
having worked for such an extensive period of time with Herman Welk, I assume that you did work with Mr. Welk?
No, I'm afraid we didn't. The script was all prepared by the time I got there to work.
Perhaps you can answer the question. Since I was a child and I saw Mitchum in the movie Cape Fear, I have been told that Robert Mitchum was somewhat anti-Semitic. I have no basis for this. In fact, I don't know what it's founded on. I was somewhat surprised that he was chosen for the role of Puck Henry because Mr. Woke, being from the Washington area, is known as a devout Jew. Was there any indication of anti-Semitism from Mr. Jim?
No, not for a second.
Not at all.
Oh, no, I never. No, I'm surprised to hear that myself.
I think what he does, in Esquire, he made some anti-Semitic statements, but then it's been printed that Robert Mitchum loves to put interviewers on. In Esquire, he gave some praise of Hitler in the interview, but they claim that he does it totally as a put-on.
Oh, well, he does it all the time. I mean, he's one of those guys who likes to sit around and just grouse, but that's his way of doing an interview.
Well, it's basically, I mean, I've heard this since I'm 35. I've heard this for at least 25 years from my father, you know, who heard it 40 years ago. I have one other question concerning First Deadly Sin and Lawrence Sanders. As we're speaking, I'm reading The Case of Lucy Bending. I picture you in the role of Theodore Levine, the psychiatrist.
Absolutely.
We are in agreement. Would you say that there is something wrong with Mr. Sanders, that he is able to write? I understand writers, authors write about what they know, and I'm sitting here amazed at how sick this book is. and I felt the same way about it. And you played the sick character in the First Deadly Sin.
Well,
he writes about a lot of weird people.
He does write, but it's...
How does he do that?
Imagination. I really think my wife's a writer, and there's a certain thing where everyone always wants to come up, especially it's a modern phenomenon too, that we want to come up with a Freudian answer to everyone's writing. And it ultimately comes down to imagination. And some people can imagine things better, and you can imagine certain things better than others. And he obviously imagines this psychotic behavior, and he invents... I mean, because when I did First Day Sin, I studied a lot of mass murders. I did 20 case histories, and the character he invented doesn't fit any profile anywhere. It's an absolutely, totally invented character. But it worked on the page, and that's the ultimate test. And whatever he has, he does that.
Also, The Case of Lucy Bending is a commentary on South Florida.
Well, that is where Mr. Sanders is from, I understand. But I wonder, reading it page after page, how he understands and...
I don't know, I loved it.
I described to my wife what's going on in the book, and she thinks that I'm kidding.
I got a break for news. Thank you.